Alrighty, I'm set to go if you guys are.
Yeah. I'm ready to ruin this podcast.
Yeah.
Right down the tubes,
I've had
folks.
four cans of beans and a big bowl of broccoli. Let's go.
This is the Citadel Cafe. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 16, recorded Wednesday, April 11th, 2012. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com, and to my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm on the mend. It's all good, my friend.
On the mend. Good stuff. I wish I was more on the mend. I've been having a coughing fit in the last 2 hours that have just been driving me crazy. It's almost like I've got a piece of food stuck in my throat.
Nice.
And it's just the tail end of this cough that I just can't seem to get rid of. To my other right is, well, what would be Chad, but he is not with us again today. Now, he says that he's working.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to let everybody know that it's also Chad's birthday today.
So if his boss is listening, maybe he's called in sick today?
perhaps. Mayhaps. Mayhaps. So he may be another year older, but I also think that he is lying.
Well, he's not looking bad for 40.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Jack.
Yes, happy birthday, sir. I hope that you are having a rockin' good time, whatever you are doing. And if you are indeed at work, I hope it's not boring you to tears.
And it was also very nice of the lease to give him an apology as well.
Nice. Oh, man. Filling Chad's chair this week, we have another guest and a first-timer to the Citadel Cafe, Mr. Brockett Vola. Welcome to the show, Brockett.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's a big happy birthday to Chad, and his chair is nice and squishy, if you were wondering. Very plush.
As long as it's not warm, right? That's what you got to watch out for.
Yeah,
or moist.
Those are warning signs.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, before we dig in here, Brockett, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what you do?
I'm Brockett Vola. I live in Chicago, Illinois. I always say it exactly like that because I feel like I'm on radio, and I am. Basically, I live in Chicago. I've done a lot of theater in my background and writing, and I do podcasts now on the side with my co-host Kyle Ferguson. We do Biggest Fan Podcast, and I also do another podcast, about a bi-weekly podcast that my co-host now has an appendicitis. So normally I do a show with the girl Erin Kirby and Fuzzy Feeling Films, which is all about romantic and comedic films.
Oh, cool. Sweet. I don't think I knew about the new show.
Yeah, it's I don't know if a lot of other people knew about it either, but Aaron and I are chugging along. Lots of fun. We just pretty much, a girl loves her squishy films and I'm a boy who likes some of them, so it works out.
Nice. Very, very cool. Well, if you're out there and you happen to be new to the Citadel Cafe, this is where we three come to hang out and talk about the things that we've been into lately. We do gravitate towards geeky and sci-fi fantasy stuff, but we're not myopic. We cover anything from movies to television to books, apps, and websites, maybe even squishy films if we see so fit to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to start off this week because I've had a rough week. I thought last week was rough. Now, I was sick, so It was very self-centered last week. This week, I'm trying to catch up. I'm trying to get stuff done. And I just cannot seem to get ahead this week. Nothing is working like it should. And that includes other people in customer service that are supposed to make my life easier. So for those of you that don't know, with StarCrossedOnline.com, some fans can order prints if they want some cool stuff to take home and support the comic. I went out to make some of those prints, get the orders filled the other day, and I had to wait, I think it was upwards of 2.5 to 3 hours for these prints. These are 8.5 by 11 black and white glossy prints that they're nothing fancy. It's mostly just a donation to the site and then you get a souvenir. Anyway, I went and I got this print order filled, and I'm telling you right now, people with an IQ under 70 should not be working at a print counter.
Yeah.
So he says that it's going to take, I'm trying to leave the names of the businesses out of this because I don't want it to be a slight against the business. It's more of a slight against the individuals, I found out later. But he said it's going to take about 90 minutes, give or take. So I thought, all right, well, I've already walked to the print place. I'll walk to the grocery store. I'll get my groceries. I'll come back. Took my sweet time. I was listening to my audiobook, which happens to be the Game of Thrones book 3. So, you know, like I'm enjoying the time, but after a while I'm like, okay, 90 minutes is up. I need to go get my prints, get home and do some work. So I come back. Nothing has happened. Nothing.
Mm.
Not only has nothing happened, but the dude who took my order has gone home for the day and didn't tell anybody else about the order, which is still sitting there. You know, it took them 10 minutes to find it, guys. Once they found it, then they start, oh no, like this customer is here and he doesn't look very happy. So we've got to rush through this and we got to get it all done. And they start doing all this stuff and you're all proud of herself. And she comes up with my prints. Now it's a comic strip.
Mm-hmm.
And my files are all prepped. I like to think that I know what I'm doing. Anyway, they present me the prints all proud, and they're not landscape. They're printed portrait. So the comic strip is this tiny little thing in the middle of the page.
Ugh.
I waited 15 minutes for this.
Did you get to keep the misprints or did you give them back?
No, I gave them the misprints. I was like, okay, whatever.
You can use them as bookmarks.
Yeah, I know. But anyway, so regardless, I was like, all right, you know what? The files are as they should be. The only instructions that you need are my printed instructions, which I left, you know, on this thing. Don't mess with the file. Like you did, the file has been organized on my end in landscape. Like it should be foolproof, one would think.
Mm.
Anyway, so I finally got the prints. I got to keep a couple extra, and I got to keep a couple extra of the color as well, because I had some other prints for another client that was being printed off. They wanted a copy of the iTunes art that I designed for them. But it took really the better part of 3 hours. Now, this includes my walking there, which is probably the better part of 30 minutes one way. But it took 3 hours out of my day to get a half a dozen prints done.
Mm.
You know, and then I'm trying to get things going today and trying to get things going with the artwork, and like I can't draw this morning to save my life. You know, I did a couple extra warm-up drawings just to kind of get myself there. I didn't really start hitting my stride until 3 o'clock this afternoon. You know, and then all of a sudden it's 5 o'clock and I've got to eat dinner and prep for the show, and like there's just the whole world just kind of came to a grinding halt today, and it's like I'm already 2 days behind, and I just, you know, or a week behind, I guess. It's just one of those days where it's just like that. That's how my week has been. So I'm looking forward to this show because I always have a good time on this little cafe. Mm-hmm. I always enjoy hanging out with the guys and chilling out and having a good couple laughs. So, man, what a way to start the week. I really hope it goes like up from here, because it can't go any lower. Oh, man. Peyton, what's new with you, man? What's positive? Positive.
Positive.
Bring us into the positive light.
Positive. I'm on the mend, which is positive. I started the week off on a down note too. Sunday morning, I got to sleep in, which was great until about 9 o'clock, or no, actually about 8 o'clock when my wife woke me up. Normally we're up around 7 or so. So, you know, an extra hour is a wonderful thing. And she woke me up saying we need to do the driveway because we had the in-laws coming over for Easter dinner. Easter breakfast. So we have a very long driveway. Depending on the snow conditions, it could take anywhere between 45 minutes to 2 hours to do it, depending on how thick the snow is. So I run it and get it done because it's quite slippery and all that. And just as I'm finishing up, of course, you know, we have a guy who was plowing our driveway, but he had everything put away for the season. He rolls up the driveway, and I'm about to put the last shovel away, right? Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I get back in the house, and I grab a cup of coffee, and that didn't sit well. And then that turned into a migraine, and then I managed to get through breakfast and stuff, but then I spent the next 14 hours asleep. So anyway, that was fun, but it's all good now. The boy got my son gave him a little push bike for Easter.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, which was awesome. For people who don't know, I have a 2-year-old who's about the same size as a 4-year-old, and finding any sort of toys or things for his age, for his size and age, just could be kind of a challenge. So we found one push bike at a store, a kid store, and a push bike is essentially a bicycle that doesn't have any pedals or chain on it. So the kid just sits on it, pushes around, and then eventually they get their balance up, and then they can just move on to a regular bike with no training wheels. So anyway, so we gave him that, and I don't know if I've ever seen a happier kid. Anyway, he was just absolutely ecstatic, and all day Sunday and all day Monday he walked around with his helmet on, because he knows no helmet, no bike, so he just kept his helmet on all day long. So it was quite funny.
Nice.
And so that was fun. And Yeah, other than that, things are going great around here. My in-laws also gave them a little pool frisbee thing. It's probably about a foot and a half, 2 feet in diameter, with a foam edge, and it's got a vinyl in the center. And he's been using it as a skateboard, so he puts one foot on it, and he's just pushing with the other foot, and he's sliding all around the kitchen, and he keeps saying skateboard. I have no idea where he heard this. Anyway, I can see a lot of cast in this kid's future. He's going to be a little accident prone. He's always climbing over stuff. And anyway, yeah, so that's all the news that fit the print around here. How about you, Brockett? What's going on with you?
Well, I'm feeling fantastic. I'm 3 for 3 with you guys, except mine, I think, has to do with allergies. In Chicago, apparently, the winter came and went quickly, which is kind of ironic considering the Game of Thrones motif, but winter came, but is like slowly strolling away. So we have bursts of 60 degree weather down to 30 degree at night. And I'm sure there are plenty of people who are like, stop griping. But still, it does this thing where if it's 30 degrees outside and I see what can only be described as waves, legion, armies of pollen all over the sidewalks, that's not fair. You can't hit me with the cold in my nose hitting my nose and then also the pollen hitting my nose and thus making my life awful. So allergies are just destroying my face, and it hurts real bad.
Yeah, I see Jack I've got Frost allergies. Sorry, go ahead, Baden.
I envision Jack Frost and Mother Nature sitting on the sidewalk laughing at you.
Right, yeah.
We'll get him, you watch.
Yeah,
oh, definitely, man. That guy.
I feel your pain, Brockett. I have allergies as well, but thankfully spring has not sprung around here yet. We've had some warm days, but it's not been consistent enough to cause the pollen to start flowing around, thank God. I don't know what I would do if I had allergies with this cold. Brutal. Brutal, that's brutal.
Rough. Yeah.
Well, before we get into the rest of the content of the show, I do want to give everybody a Hat for Poop update, which is the Hero Academy tournament for people or persons of opposing podcasts, which we are doing with the Gamers Inn. And I'm proud to say that I have won my first rounds with Jocelyn. I emerged from those three games victorious. A clean sweep. If I
may, 3-0. Oh,
yes, 3-0. Well, with against Jocelyn anyway. Yeah. Chad has also emerged victorious against Ryan. I lost my first match to Ryan, won my second match, and we are currently in the death throes of probably the longest match I have ever played with somebody in terms of moves. I've been pretty diligent trying to get things done timely with the Hat for Poop tournament, but. Ryan and I have been going at this game for at least a week solid. And I mean, I play every day, twice a day sometimes, just to try and see if we can finish this up. But we both want to win. So it's yeah. Really kind of intense. Chad has won 2 games against Paul, which does mean that he's won that round, although they'll play the third game anyway. And it looks like, as we mentioned last week, Jocelyn had beat Chad in their matchup. I won my round against Paul, but we are currently in our second round. And Peyton, it just says everything for here with you is in progress.
Yeah, so I'm playing three games going on right now. I was the second, you know, I guess they started all 3 games. So, and 2 of them I seem to be doing okay with it, but I'm not feeling it, man. I'm just not a gamer.
Yeah, you're not liking it, huh?
No, I'm you know, playing the game, and you know, it's kind of fun, but. Anyway,
Yeah. I don't know what it is about Hero Academy. I really enjoy it. Like I think one of the things that it's so appealing is that it's a turn game. Like I don't need to play with you at the same time.
Yeah. I don't know. I much prefer chess or something, or you know, Catan, but
yeah.
I'm still learning as I'm playing, right?
Yeah, so, there's that too.
Yeah, you know, playing against who are we playing? We're playing against Jocelyn.
There's Jocelyn, Paul. Ryan, and Paul. Paul is Swick. Ryan is Armorfy.
Yeah. So Swick, you know, like we're playing on a bigger board with him, and he has like completely different characters. I'm like, what's that guy do? And I'm still trying to wrap my head around all this stuff. And
there's a question mark in the top hand corner that you can click, and then you can.
Yeah, I click it all the time. So.
Oh, me too. Yeah,
it is hard to learn. Yeah. It's hard to learn at first, especially because like when I first started playing, the only thing available was just the council, right? But now there's 4 factions, so I mean it's a little bit more to take in. Brockett, you're playing too, I hear?
Yeah, I actually started my first ever game with you, Joel, actually. You're the first one I started. Since then, I've completed 3 games all against my other friend, and I've won 1 and lost 2. I just don't... I kind of like, you know, I'm just not good at really thinking like 8 moves ahead. And I come from a background where, yes, when I was younger, I took Ritalin. So I get very like, all right, my attention's lost. I have no idea what my focus was. So I'm just jab, jab, jab at this crystal until something else happens. So I kind of blitz quickly. And then by the end game, I'm kind of like, well, I guess I'll just put another shield on this guy. Oh, only 1 shield. All right. Well, that's cool. So I have a serious trouble. If I led an army, I'd send all my berserkers out. And at the end, there'd be like 8 knights with like 10 shields each. And they'd be like, well, we should have waited. But man, if only they could do that, that'd be amazing. But no, unfortunately not.
Nice. Yeah. No, the one thing that I find frustrating about the game, especially when you're in a tournament situation where there's a little bit of trash talking going on, you know, like, and you want to win, the problem is it's very much like Scrabble, and like you have no control over what you get and when. You can trade stuff in and hope to get something new, but what you've been drawn, all like, I think it's 18 or 22 like pieces for the game, they're set in stone from the get-go. What you have, the order that they come in, you might be able to figure around with a little bit, but it's very much luck. Like, I'm playing a game right now against Brian Provo, one of the other guests that we've had on the show before, and I'm getting my butt handed to me because I have no men. I'm playing the dwarves, I have an engineer, and that's it. And everything else is like a sword and a shield and a drill thing and like or a beer stein. It's like, well, I can't do anything with an engineer even if I put all of those things on the engineer. It's like the most useless piece in the game. Anyway, so it's very frustrating. And Brian was like, your strategy is really confusing me right now. I don't see the point. I'm like, har har har. I call it the shit draw from the door strategy. And he thought that was pretty funny. Anyway, yeah, it was.
I guess you guys have all been early adopters of the game. You know, it does give you a little bit of an advantage. I guess like most tech, you know, if you're an early adopter, you get to know it.
Well, I mean, I've had that conversation with my sister who just recently got an iPhone, and I mean, she loves it. And I asked her one time, we were driving down to my mom's place for dinner over the Easter weekend, and I asked her how she thought, you know, the phone was going, and so she had time on the, you know, 40-minute drive there to articulate some of the things that she was like, so how do you do this, or I keep having this problem where typing an email is a real issue. I said, well, you know, if you put your finger on the screen and you hold it, it turns it like a little magnifying glass and you can move the cursor around. And she just looked at me like, shut up. You know, so just the little things, like, you know, I don't even remember if that was in the instruction booklet with the iPhone. I don't know if I even read the instruction book with an iPhone, because I was such a late person getting an iPhone that I feel like enough of my friends, you included, I think Peyton had one before I did.
Yeah.
So I've seen one enough, and I've seen someone use it enough to kind of, I knew the gist of it. But Andrea was just like, her mind was just blown by all the stuff that you could do. And I was like, oh man, like, you and I need to go for coffee and we need to have a sit down, because she's probably like really frustrated with some of the things that she just can't figure out, because there's just, you know, they just, it's one of those things that it's really easy to pick up and use, but really difficult to master, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. My mother-in-law has got an iPhone a little while ago as well. And I was over there this weekend, and I assigned photographs to a bunch of people on her contact list. Because, you know, she just had like the random avatars. So anyway, so I put a not so flattering picture of myself in there for me, and I try to get one of her husband in there as well, but she wouldn't let me put the picture I wanted to put in there. And anyway, it's kind of funny. You know, you change the ringtones and all that stuff too.
So. Nice. Yeah. No, I want to change. I want to change my ringtone for a couple people. I used to have it changed for Chad, but sorry, go ahead, Peyton.
I think you have mine as this call is not important.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. For anybody that's familiar with the Frog Pants Network, Scott Fletcher does a really cool voice work for them, and he also has these free ringtones on his website, which I don't remember right now. But if you Google Scott Fletcher, you will find it. He does voiceover stuff, and the ringtone that I downloaded for Peyton was basically Scott going, this phone call is not important. Don't pick up the phone. Leave it in your pocket. Let it ring. Not an important phone call. This is not an important phone. It would just go on and on and on, to the point where one time I missed a call from Peyton because I was laughing so hard listening to the track, and I was waiting for it to stop, and I realized, wait a minute, my phone is ringing. So to Peyton, it's like ring 4, Ring 5.
Yeah.
You know, so I ended up letting it go to voicemail or something like that.
And I bled to death on the side of a highway.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, man.
Yeah, not good for emergency situations. Do not use those for family members unless they're short.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can move into a what we're watching. And, of course, we'll start off with the Game of Thrones Season 2, Episode 2. This is The Nightlands. And the plot continues with some of the storylines from the season premiere. The Night's Watch caravan heading to the wall is interrupted, or heading north of the wall, is interrupted by a pair of City Watch guards. Oh, wow. I got this all backwards. The Night's Watch caravan, which is not Theon. What's his name? Yaren. Yoren? Yaren.
Yeah.
Yoren has taken the people up to the wall. It's interrupted by a pair of City Watch guards that are looking for Gendry. The small council receives the terms proposed by King Robb Stark from the north. Daenerys waits in the desert for the return of the three riders she has sent out, and Theon Greyjoy returns to his homeland of the Iron Islands. So there was another, the first thing that I noticed right off is that during the opening credits now, they have both the Iron Islands as well as Dragonstone that are now permanent fixtures in the opening credits. And I think that's really cool for the people that are new to the series that they're giving some locations for people to kind of put in their brain. I thought that was really well done. But I think, Brock, you had mentioned that you haven't seen this episode.
No, I've not seen it. I saw the very first episode of this season. Just a quick point on the map thing. It's excellent they do this for the TV show, because I'm not joking, guys. I got through the entire first Game of Thrones book, and in the last five chapters, I was like, what are these two pages at the beginning? Oh, a map that could have really made this entire story much easier. Wow. Well, this is not what I pictured, but I'm going to try my best to force it into my brain now. But yeah, it's excellent to have that for the beginning of the series. It's really cool, too, just the way they do the kind of weird gear works and that kind of stuff. But yes, I have I've not seen the second episode, but I saw the premiere when it came out, and I've read the second book, so I'm pretty well versed in what I have of Clash of Kings, which is that second season.
Cool. Well, in that case, we'll just let our listeners know that, of course, this is a spoiler section, because we're going to talk about the second episode if you haven't seen it, or if you care about spoilers, then you might want to back out now and come back later. Brock, it was kind enough to say that we can just go ahead with this. So we'll dive right in. And one of the first things that you might be surprised about, Brock, is that during the storyline that follows Arya and Gendry, these City Watch guards that come up looking for what is supposed to be, I mean, they're looking for Gendry, but Arya thinks it's her. She thinks that they're looking for her instead. And she reveals almost immediately that she's Arya Stark. She's the daughter of the former Hand of the King that was beheaded for treason. And Gendry is completely flabbergasted. And that doesn't happen in book two until almost the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Arya's got this great big secret that could have been a really interesting storyline this whole season. And she keeps it for three episodes.
Yeah. Well, I think the way they set it up is that he knew she was a girl. He didn't know that she was royalty, but he knew she was a girl.
Yes.
And I think that way, having the guards show up, coming from having not read the books, but just as a TV series, the last shot of the first episode is of the two of them. So to start the next episode with them makes sense. And, he's already stepped in to protect her once last season. So to have him sort of step up into that role, at this point, it sort of looks like he could be doing that, and but for him to have a reason to do that, because she's, when they come in, he's sort of standing there he doesn't know they're after him, and she thinks they're after her, and all that stuff, right? So when it got turned around, and he knows that she's not going to narc on him, so at the same time, he's not going to narc on her, right? So
yeah. Yeah, and the reason why he figures out that she's a girl much later, because when they're all in the great big party that's heading up to the wall, she's always going off on her own to pee, and it's easy to miss. But later
make water.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. later on in the book, there's a situation where it's just Arya and a couple of other people, including Gendry, and she can't hide it anymore. She keeps on going off by herself to do it, and that's when he figures out that she's a girl. It wasn't so early. So yeah, I was a little bit confused and disappointed that they let that out of the bag so fast. But I mean, they did that with the whole the incest thing too. It was as we discussed last week, is that the letters went out to Stannis and then from Stannis to the rest of the kingdom about Jaime and Cersei, and that was kept secret for, like I said, you know, all of two episodes or something like that. So
right. Yeah.
So
but that also helps establish, you know, that Joffrey's going to send out the. Watch to kill, right?
So yeah, no, I realized like that there was a lot of stuff that had to move forward, and I suppose I can mention this now. I'm starting to get a little concerned. This was a good episode, wasn't the best episode. There were some slow episodes in season one, but I'm really starting to feel like they're moving really, really fast, and they're plowing through the content of the book, and I am like having a hard time processing everything.
Right.
And I feel like somebody that's new to the series, having not read the books, would be pretty lost or at risk of being very lost, because as this goes on and more stuff starts happening, it's going to be more confusing if they keep this pace. If they slow it down, it'll be fine. I'm not cheering on as much as I was in season one. I'm a little bit concerned about some of the changes that they're making.
I was just gonna say one of the things I noticed, though, if they're moving well, for one, her revealing it kind of to Gendry early on is something I've noticed a lot more, particularly even going back to something like the Hunger Games. When a character has, like, in a book, it's so easy to get into their mind because they're talking to you, and so you can get all their worries through the pages. But in, like, TV shows and stuff, I've noticed secrets come out way earlier, so they at least have one person they can verbalize all their fears to, instead of it, like, them, like, kind of talking. Like, otherwise you'd have to have narration, or then be like, so I wonder what's going on with my brother, or this and that. And
if she doesn't have anybody to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. You look over her shoulder, it's like 15 minutes goes by, she says her feelings, and closes the book, and then they walk along the road. So yeah, I'm not too surprised that they're moving really quickly, because just my general opinion when it comes to the stories is I wasn't a big Tolkien fan growing up, so I didn't really come into the world of heavy tomes of all these ancient names and kings and this vast worldness until really Game of Thrones, even though I'm a big Greek mythology fan. But the one thing I'll say about the stories is it does seem I have like this wagon train picture in my brain for certain characters. I'm like, oh, well, they circled the wagons one more time in this chapter, so can't wait to see what happens the next three chapters. So it is pretty exciting to hear, though, at least from my point of view. I haven't seen it yet, but that things do move a little quickly. Of course, you know, you have a great point, Joel, that it can be nerve-wracking when you see certain character developments not really working out as you kind of were hoping for.
Yeah, well, I mean, I mentioned it last week where we were talking about, I think it's Maester Caster? No, I can't remember his name. Stannis is Maester that kills himself or attempts to kill Melisandre in the first little bit. I mean, that was a whole chapter in the second book, and they didn't give a lot of weight to it in the series. And I can appreciate that. I mean, like, some things have got to get shortened. Like, I get it. I really feel like Arya's story was one of the most interesting things about the second book, so I hope they don't expedite that too much. There is still a lot to come, so, I mean, I don't want to get too hung up on it, but I think you're always trying to balance, you know, like, from a creator standpoint, like, I can see that, well, you know, it's a really good point, Brockett, too, is that they can't have her talking to nobody, you know, like, there's no... I mean, the only thing I could think of would be like if her wolf was still around, she could be saying something to the dog, which, you know, of course doesn't reveal anything to anybody important. The other thing I feel that they did poorly, I do have a lot of complaints about this episode, so pardon me if I'm being a bit of a get off my lawn old man tonight, but the addition of more gratuitous sex stuff in the Theon storyline. So we cut to Theon Greyjoy, and he's going to his homelands, and he's on a boat, and there's all this chat that's happening while he's having sex with this woman. And none of it needed to be there. Like, he could have easily been talking to somebody else. There was not much point to it. And it just kind of, it was long. Like, it wasn't a a short clip. It was just long conversation that happens while he's belittling this girl that he's screwing. And I mean, not to sound crass, but neither one of these people are attractive people. You know, like I do not need to see these people naked, let alone doing anything or pretending to do something on screen. It just, it's not doing anyone any favors. And I feel like it's slighting what I think is already a good series. You don't need to show me tits to get me to watch another episode. Like, I will watch it.
Mm. Yeah,
I'm on board.
Well, I think a part of the reason behind that might have something to do as well, is just to show how Theon is Theon. How he sort of believes his own hype at this point. You know, he's been raised by the Starks. He's you know, Rob's right hand man in his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, he's going on his mission to get, you know, to raise his father's navy and then go out and storm the castle. Mm-hmm. You know, and this just shows, you know, how full of himself he is, and how, you know, he believes all his own hype, so that when the time comes, you know, he can you know, have sex with anyone he wants, do whatever he wants. He gets there, he's throwing coins around at the dock and all that stuff, and, you know, this woman comes over and talks to him. He's like, oh yeah, I can have her too, and all this fun stuff. And then he's, you know, he sort of gets put in his place when he bumps into his old man, who for me actually sets the tone for the entire episode of how I feel like this episode is all basically about, like, the cost of playing in the Game of Thrones, you know?
Yeah.
You know, because yeah. Then he looks at all this fancy dress that his son's wearing after being gone for 9 years, and he's asked, you know, that little bauble on your chest, how'd you pay for that? You know, you pay for that in iron or gold, which really puts everything in perspective on his entire world view, right?
You're talking about his dad.
His dad, yeah.
Great, yeah.
Other, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, no, and it's a really interesting concept. It's something that Jocelyn brought up, actually, just before the show. She was making sure that I had that as a point to talk about, because it really is an interesting thing where, you know, you don't accept gifts and you don't purchase adornments. You're supposed to take them off of someone that you've defeated. It's the iron price. So, I mean, if you're wearing a chain or a helmet, you better have killed the dude that you took that from.
Yeah, or made it.
Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, it's kind of it's a harder way of living on the island, I guess, compared to the mainland. And the sex, I guess, continues right into this attractive woman who is named Yara in the TV series. And, you know, he's fondling her and trying to get in her pants, and she's flirting with him, but she's not really doing a whole lot to fight it. And that was something that was played up a lot bigger in the books, because of course it's revealed once he reaches the throne room that it's actually his sister, who he hasn't seen in 12 plus years.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's just another cue to incest from Martin, which is not surprising.
Yeah.
I mean, she has some fun with that. And immediately right there, there's a big difference between the mainland and the Iron Islands, because I think it's Balin is dad's name. Chat room will correct me if I'm wrong. He says that she is the rightful heir because she's more of a self-made, you know, woman than Theon is, because he's still a Stark's man, he says. Yeah. And, but I mean, like, there are no girls, I mean, outside of the queen regent, you know, Cersei, there's no real women in power, you know, on Westeros. It's the Iron Islands, you know, there's no women commanding things in Westeros. So, you know, I thought that was a distinct difference as well. And one thing that they did, and they say it's because she was being confused with Shay, but, they changed the name of Theon's sister from Asha in the book to Yara, which it is what it is in the TV show. And, and they said that it was being confused with Shay, but Shay and Asha, like, I don't know. I mean, they've got the same letters, but I didn't understand that. I mean, if that's one of the only major changes of that storyline, then hey, I mean, like, that's a small glitch. It doesn't really affect the plot, so to speak. It's just, you know, it's interesting when you think about something that was written as one of these tomes, you know, as you mentioned, Brockett, that is now being translated into a TV show for a lot of people who haven't read the books.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So have you written anything, Brockett, that's been translated into a visual medium?
Not particularly, no. I've written particular scripts that could have been radio dramas,
right,
but haven't really done anything with that. But I certainly know when you do that adaptation, just going to the Wilson example. Like, Castaway is one of my favorite films because one of the most ingenious plot devices ever devised is, if a man's on an island by himself, he won't talk unless you give him something to talk to. So let's make this, you know, volleyball his best friend. And so he gets out every emotion that he's thinking inside his head to it. So it's always really fascinating to see what kind of things writers can do with the material when you can't be in the person's head and you don't want the obnoxious narration. I am a bit disappointed to hear that they don't, it's not quite as played with, the Yara, I guess in this instance, Yara and Theon situation, because I remember just grinning ear to ear throughout that entire chapter, because I don't know, at that point I kind of was like, I don't know how to feel about Theon. It's his first time in the book where he gets the big name over the chapter. You see things from his point of view. So I'm like, all right, here's a new guy. And it's one of the first chapters, and yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I really look forward to revisiting that part when I see the episode to see how they deal that.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I mean, that's, I don't know, it's, yeah, well said. I'm resisting that urge to basically repeat what you said, because it's a bad podcasting habit that I sometimes fall into, but I agree.
Nice.
One of my favorite things, of course, about the series, and I know that you probably have a lot to say about this as well, is the exchanges between Tyrion and Bronn, and Tyrion and Cersei. And they, of course, were my favorite things about this episode, because they're easily the most interesting thing to listen to and watch. So, what did you think about Tyrion's scenes this time around?
Oh, actually, it made Lee and I like laugh out loud watching it and clap our hands together like a kid who just eaten his first piece of like birthday cake. We were just roaring. It made us so happy, right? Anyway, because mm-hmm. you know the having this little private dinner with the head of the city guard, and he thinks he's all, you know, he's sitting there with a hand, and it's all well and good, and he's just lorded all this stuff now. And Tyrion's like, I don't trust you. You're going to the wall, right? Mm. Which is pretty badass. But then the idea of taking Bronn and promoting him to the head of the watch just really, really was funny. But then I again with the you know, Tyrion putting people around him who he can quote unquote trust. You know, he asked Bronn the question, you know, would you, with a question, kill a baby while it was feeding off his mother? And he said, not with a question. I'd ask how much. And then the Tyrion sort of gives him a look, right? And, you know, and Bronn's serious about it, right? So he knows it's just, again, it's the price of doing things, right? And, yeah, Tyrion afterwards was, Tyrion... also with the eunuch, and when he comes into his room and the guy's in chatting up his missus, right? And that entire thing about her being a cook, and the you should try her fish pie and all this other stuff, and I don't think he would like the fish pie, and all the innuendos and stuff was really quite funny. And then, like, you know, the threat and how he was saying Ned Stark was an honorable man. He's the guy I am not, so, you know, don't mess around, sort of thing. Anyway.
Mm. Yeah, threaten me again and I'll throw you in the sea, I think is what he said.
Yeah, and then he talks about how you can paddle and all that jazz, right? But Tyrion, just, you know, the acting is so good for him and stuff, and the exchange between him and his sister, and how much, you know, they hate each other.
Oh man,
because he's sort of, you know, just giving her a couple of digs and jabs here about the rumors about her and Jaime. And then she goes straight to the throat, saying how he killed her mother, right? She was my mother too, et cetera, et cetera. But yeah, he does, and he also gets, you know, the big reveal that, you know, she wasn't the one who made the call for the babies and all that stuff, right? And,
yeah, I mean, it's funny, these scenes that keep on cropping up with Cersei, is they're really very roller coaster like. Like at the very beginning, you know, of the last episode, you feel like she's lost control. You don't feel sorry for her, but you know that she's feeling pretty vulnerable when she's now not the favorite child. You know, she's let Ned Stark get killed. She's lost Arya. And so Tyrion is now the one in favor, or at least for now. And then she walks into Tyrion's, I guess, office there at in this episode, and it's very clear that she's lost control over Joffrey. That you know, and it's not only that we know, but now everybody knows, you know, and Tyrion is, you know, realizing all of this as he's putting, you know, two and two together. And just when you think that Cersei is on her heels, just like she illustrates with Littlefinger last episode, where she does this little dance, you're like, well, she's not exactly helpless. She starts like with the forked tongue in at Tyrion, and
how he tore himself out of her mother.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see that she's never. You can kick her, but she doesn't stay down. You know.
Yeah.
He's got claws.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Her scene with the council was the only time that I really felt where she comes across as I don't want to say. Well, in this world, they would refer to her as basically like being a woman. Like she's just not really concerned about these things. There was part of the city council where, you know, she's dismissing Rob as a king and she's not worried and blah, 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 blah. It's basically just all talk. But Tyrion is like, do you realize that we're losing the war? Like he's not losing the battles he's fighting in. He's winning them all.
Yeah.
You know, they're not huge wars. They're smaller battles, but he's winning. He's gaining ground. And she just doesn't seem to care. And that's the only time where you really feel like Cersei is out of place is when she's kind of governing a battle or trying to figure out the greater, I guess, moves that are happening around the chessboard.
Tyrion also warns her against having the city turn against her or the people turn against her, and she has no concern of that either. So
yes, yeah. Yeah, as a Lannister, she kind of looks down her nose at anybody who's not, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I find that that's very true. I think that kind of ties it up for me for Tyrion. How did you guys feel about the Daenerys stuff? Like, I mean, I kind of could have done without it. Like, she didn't even need to be in this episode.
When it comes to Daenerys in general, for me, I just know that I think you guys actually talked about this last episode. She, it's interesting to see what she has to do in the second book. I mean, clearly she does have a plot for the second storyline. But I'm really fascinated to see how they do that for television. For an adaptation point of it, there are circumstances where her chapters are more what she's thinking and less what she's doing. So again, it's a bad situation if you're sitting down as a writer to be like, well, I got these four chapters to wrap up. It looks like she thinks about a lot of things. So what can I give her to do that shows that? And I don't know. I'm mostly afraid of just in general what can really come out of this season for her until sort of things really start to progress.
Well, I think, you know, we're probably going to see a lot more of her, you know, floundering in this vast wasteland because, you know, they sent back the horse with the rider, you know, Rider's horse comes in and, you know, they're not going to burn the body and all that stuff and he won't see his ancestors. And it was the guy who was loyal to her in the very beginning when her brother went to strike her down in the forest.
I think so. I can't remember
his name. It was the same guy and all that stuff. Anyway, so again, you know, like it's just, again, with the price thing and all that, you know, she's, you know, she's losing all these people that are close to her and she needs to, you know, step up and do this protecting that she's talking about doing for these people and make her enemies scream and all that stuff. So I think we're going to see, you know, I have no idea what's going to happen in the story arc, but I can see them, you know, drag her down a couple more pegs just so that when she does finally, you know, get the means to, you know, to strike back, is going to be like, oh yeah, here comes the shit now, right? So,
well, yeah, I suppose it does illustrate that she gets a little bit more vengeful.
Yeah.
She starts to get angry at the way that the world in general is working against her as a queen of a Khalasar as opposed to a Khal or Carl. I can never pronounce it right. what's his name? Rikaro is the guy that gets sent back with his head in the bag, on the saddlebag. And yeah, I don't know. The thing that Daenerys has that Arya does not is Jorah Mormont. So all of the thinking and stuff that you're concerned about, Brockett, she could just kind of have more conversations with Jorah.
Right.
You know, so because there's no secrets there. Like, he's with her.
Yeah.
It's not that there's a giant secret between him or anything like that. So at least for this second book, I mean, they could kind of illustrate it that way. And I hope they do, because I mean, I like that relationship between Mormont
and Daenerys. I do too, yeah.
So are they going to have an actual relationship? Because I mean, they alluded at something when, you know, he said, you know, you need to be their strength. And she said, well, as you are mine.
No, when I say relationship, Peyton, I just kind of mean relationship in general, a companionship, not a romantic one. Because it's the only relationship that she really has, because the rest of them are servants and followers. Like he serves her, but she looks to him for guidance, right?
Yeah, well, he sort of became her father figure, you know, when she married Drogo, he was like, this is what you do, and et cetera. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, because he was one of the few people that she knew right away that could speak both languages.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he comes from the same places. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this wasn't what was I going to say? Wow, completely lost my train of thought.
You're just thinking of that dreamy blonde hair in the desert.
I know what I was going to say. Last episode wasn't the only time we get to see a wolf, because this week we get to see a ghost for the first time. And I thought there was a really cool technical thing to point out, and I noticed it right away when I watched it. And that this time, I'm pretty sure... Call me out if it's wrong. I don't think it was CG.
It was probably forced perspective.
I think it was either an After Effects thing where they filmed the wolf or the husky separately, or they did some sort of forced perspective, like you said, Peyton. But one thing they did do is that they slowed down the footage of the wolf. Versus the rest of what was going on around them, because what would happen, of course, if the animal was that big and moving as quickly as a regular sized dog, it would look off,
mass.
Exactly. So I thought it was a neat trick. I mean, he's not on screen for very long, and I understand from the book that Ghost isn't really big as far as a dire wolf goes, but I thought it was really a really neat shot, and they were they did a really good job of not, you know, going all blockbuster movie,
I like how Sam steps in, is like, ghost, no, bad dog, sort of thing, right? That was funny.
Because
you know, you could show so Ghost is almost like, you know, the group's mascot, right?
I think they even allude to that a little bit in the book.
I am very excited that the dire wolves, you know, again, when you read the book, you have a picture of how big they are, something like that. So I was excited to see how, you know, Grey Wind in the last episode, how he was growing and that sort of element. And Ghost is always fascinating because, of course, he's the super unique one, just like Jon Snow is sort of the super unique one. But it's pretty fascinating that how different approaches to it. I was mostly worried that at some point, just because, I don't know, something about Hollywood nowadays, that the wolves would tend to look a little bit like, I don't make any presumptions about you gentlemen, but the wolves from New Moon and the Twilight books, when they make the movies, they transform into basically giant wolves. And it was really excited to see that they focused much on them just being a very strong wolf, but at the same time, you know, having a little element of otherworldliness to them, if that makes sense. I think they just look, instead of looking like big old puppies or something like that, they have a very intense amount of real life element of wolf, and also the element of, like, you know, this sinister, you know, you're not gonna, these aren't your big old wolves that you might see in a random wolf woods. But yeah, I'm always excited to see how, you know, the fantastical elements that are tweaks on our world come out in series like this.
Yeah. You know, I think I haven't seen the New Moon stuff. I mean, outside of the trailer, I saw the special effect in the trailer. My sister said that I would enjoy the special effects and stuff like that because of the, you know, stuff that, like, that I'm into, but you still won't get me to sit down and watch it.
I say the best part of those movies are the credits. Like, oh, I need a refund.
Yeah. But what I think, I get what you're saying. Like, they're not turning them into saber-toothed wolves.
Yeah.
Like, right. They're not, their heads aren't huge. They're not exaggerated. They don't have larger-than-life fangs. It's basically all the right proportions for a timber wolf, but just bigger.
Have they moved the eyes a little closer together on these or no?
I don't think so. I think that the ghost is just a smaller wolf. Like, I think he's just got a different shaped head from the other guys. I didn't catch that at all. I'd have to go back and look.
No, I just, some of the proportions, I don't know if I'm just, it was just my memory of Grey Wind or what, but, you know, because if you made them, like, really big, but just move their eyes a little closer together, we might give them, like, you know, like their skull a bit more mass. You know,
I
don't know.
I have no idea.
Like, you know, when you draw, like a superhero, you make your heads, you know, 8 heads tall versus, you know, 7 heads tall, they look bigger.
Right. Yeah, so. You mean 9 heads tall.
Yeah, whatever the number, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And my proportions are different than that when I draw. So.
For me, it's always been 5, just because I do so much, like, you know, stuff that was... I'm more of a TV cartoon designer.
Yeah, I stick more to a 3-head-high, 2-head-high sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. While we're talking about John, I think they did a good job with answering the question that John posed last week, which was, what does Castor do with his sons?
Yeah.
And what I liked about this was how little they show you. Because obviously he takes the sons out into the wilderness and leaves them for the White Walkers, and they sound like giant spiders. It's creepy as all hell. It's very, very cool the way that they did that. And I mean, obviously he gets caught, and that's how the episode ended. But I like the fact that see, the White Walkers is something that they're doing a really good job of just kind of like alluding to. They showed you a very quick glimpse in the prologue in the very first episode of season 1, and they really haven't shown you anything since.
They mentioned how they've been sleeping under the snow for like 1,000 years or something, and
Now they're awake, and like they're coming, just like winter is coming, and there's all this kind of stuff. And
but they're bigger than a man, aren't they?
I think they're taller.
Yeah,
they're taller. The other thing is that I'm having a trouble not spoiling stuff because I'm trying to remember what happens in book 2.
Right.
And I'm just trying to not get ahead of myself. But I feel like there's more than just White Walkers. I mean, I know they talk about giants, and they talk about other stuff. Like old Nan had said some stories to Bran back in Winterfell, and she was talking about different things. But there's White Walkers, and then there's one other similar thing. And I can't remember. The Others, maybe? Oh. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, I almost think, I think you're right. Although I believe the term Others just kind of is the group name you would say for giants or White Walkers or the mystical beings that aren't necessarily humans. I think that's just one of those blanket terms. But I do think there is a more specific thing that you would think, that you wouldn't necessarily think of when you normally think fantasy, like... No, you know, like giants, well, are giants. But, like, I think there is another little unique Martinism sort of creature out there, and I'm also blanking on, and I don't want to run through again, of course, out loud, what my thoughts are because of spoilers as well.
Yeah, but, no, I agree. Because, I mean, the thing that's very specific about White Walkers is that they're undead. Mm-hmm. Like, that's their one defining characteristic. Like, you can only kill them by fire, and they're the things that attacked Mormont, and Jon saved them with his wolf. Like, those are the White Walkers. So,
I didn't know that. Right.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. Like they themselves were undead. But I guess it would make sense, yeah, because you know, the kid was hanging from the tree, and then the kid was in the first episode. So yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, the what was I gonna say? The hand that Ghost brings back when John and Sam are giving are making their vows. Mm-hmm. They brought those guys back to Castle Black when they found them, and then those are the guys, the dead guys that woke up and attacked Mormont.
Yeah, I got that, but I didn't know that I didn't know that if the White Walkers themselves were undead, or you know, because the other guys were just seemed like mindless automatons sort of thing.
That's a really good point. Maybe the guys that we saw in the very first episode weren't White Walkers. Maybe they were these others that I'm thinking of. Because they were, because the White Walkers were just people, and these guys that we saw in the prologue were tall, like they were, you know, a head or two taller than a man, right?
Yeah, and they're the ones that, you know, did away with the other guys and all that stuff, right?
But, yeah.
Blue eyes, right? Isn't that a big part of the White Walkers?
Yep, blue eyes, yeah.
They had blue eyes, and then the guys who came back from dead had gray eyes.
Okay.
So, well, they think they were blue.
Okay. Yeah, I think they were blue. I make them one guy in
there. Contact lenses. Woof.
Yeah, I don't think they didn't make them like glowing blue or anything like that.
Yeah,
like
I think the White Walkers had like a really blue eyes, didn't they?
No, mm-hmm. White Walkers just have blue eyes. I know some stuff about White Walkers from book 3 that I'm reading right now, and I'm just it's dominating my thoughts, so I can't get into it. But yeah, it certainly gets more in depth into the later in the second book, and of course in the third book they have a little bit more above the wall, of course, because John and them are now above the wall, or north of the wall. So there's a little bit more coming that way. The only other thing we can touch on, I guess, is the scene with Stannis and his blushing red queen. She is a nasty piece of work, man. You know, she's just she's trying to get to seduce the king and get, you know, him to go her way. And I mean, he's arguing with her and he's telling her, like, look, what more do you want? Like, I've already changed gods. You know, I've already burned the effigies of the seven that I grew up with. I'm following your rules. Like, what more do you want? And she's like, well, you have to give yourself fully. And he's like, well, what more do you want? So then she explains, oh, I want you to screw me. I want you to give, like, let me give you a son. And she hints at his wife up in a tower somewhere who's sickly or disgusts him in some way. And they talk about that a great deal in the book. She's really an absolute bitch in the book. She's not a nice lady
at all. A real dog.
Oh, yeah.
Almost in looks as well.
Yeah.
Specifically.
They do not describe her kindly in the book. No, not at all. But and they, of course, they've tried, but he's never been able to get an heir out of her. I think they were stillborn or miscarried. What?
Yeah, there was a lot of particular troubles. Have they done anything shown anything about Stannis' family other than his a wife? Because there is a character that is brought up in the second book. But I haven't heard her name mentioned yet, so I'm not particularly going to mention it. But yeah, there's a certain element to his family line where, yes, he has not been able to produce heirs, which is a big deal, certainly in this world.
Okay. No, they haven't really even shown her, except for one quick scene where they were burning the effigies last episode. And he goes to leave, and then he stops, and he realizes, crap, I didn't take my wife's hand. So then he reaches back, and he doesn't wait for her, but there's one woman that gets up quickly to follow him, and I'm assuming that's his wife.
Okay.
But that was just to kind of illustrate the fact that, like, she is just not in his thoughts. Like, she just, it's kind of a duty thing, I think. But yeah, I thought that was, that's the only time I've even seen her. They haven't even given her a name in the series. But yeah, I would like to give a quick shout out to GIS Gamer in the chat room. Hello, chat room. But also thanks to Jocelyn, she was able to say that whites are the people that have been killed by White Walkers and brought back to life, and that is what attacked Mormont. Whereas the White Walkers are something different. So Peyton, you're probably right in that White Walkers themselves have much bluer eyes.
Yeah,
and then whites are the things that others equals White Walkers. Oh, okay. So you're right, Brock. It's just a blanket term.
Okay.
Confusion settled. Yay! Thank you,
chat room. Yay, chat room.
Yeah.
They're the ones in the other part of the island, irritating those poor plane crash victims. And the other half of the series,
that's where the polar bear came from.
Exactly. You know, if only they'd search more of the island, they would have seen Westeros, and this would have really gotten weird really quickly.
Man. Gosh. Well done, sir. Well, while we have you here, Brock, I mean, since you've read the first two books, I mean, what did you think? What do you think of the way that HBO is handling everything so far in general?
Well, I really enjoy the way they do the character focuses. I think that's a big part of the books, clearly, because, you know, you're telling the story through different people's point of views, and they're skewed. So your narrator is never unbiased. You know, whatever they think of the world is sort of how you see the world, and so it's fascinating to see how each character, what their little globe of the world, because you can, most of the time, geographically, you only get to see what's going on in that part of the world through one character's eyes. So if you're over in the Iron Isles, you're only going to get to see it through Theon's point of view, and if you're in King's Landing, you see a lot of it from Tyrion's point of view. So it's pretty fascinating to have not only the fact that you're in different areas of the world, but also different areas seen through a certain character. So I'm really excited to see how they do that with the TV show. I've enjoyed that. And of course, I mean, Peter Dinklage is amazing, and I think they've done a really fantastic job with all the cast, and even going back to poor Ned Stark. Man, Sean Bean, his agent's like, boy, do I have a part for you. I know your history, buddy, and I know exactly what you're going to do this year. So, yeah, I think I'm really fascinated, of course, as well with the way they just deal with the set pieces and that sort of thing. Another problem I sort of have with the books in general is I do enjoy character development, but I also kind of like the gratification of if you're building towards a big momentous moment, give it to me. And there's certain parts of the books where it's kind of like, oh, by the way, this happened off screen a few months ago when we switched to a new narrator. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. I mean, I kind of was building towards that for like four chapters, and you kind of were like, well, this happened. Which is great for a television show because, of course, HBO is like, whew, we don't have to show this massive thing that happened. We can just talk about it, which is cool. So when you focus back on the characters, it is awesome because you don't really betray the audience's expectations. If this was mostly about the plot, then which sometimes it can be, which is fine. But if it does get that way, then people want to see things as beats, whereas if you see things as characters – it's completely fine if this epic, let's say, battle doesn't happen on screen, because what you're more concerned about is how it affects those people and what their emotional, what the resonance of that's going to do to them. So, yeah, I really enjoy it. And I personally, you know, I'm a slow reader. So the fact that, you know, the old Jim Gaffigan joke that why would I read a book when I can get through the movie in 2 hours and hey, I got the rest of my day. I kind of started to apply that, I think, to the Game of Thrones series. And I'm in the third book as well, Joel, and I'm reading it. And I took a break from it to read all three Hunger Games books. And I started a different book. And it just seems like such a daunting task when I'm like, maybe if I just wait one more year, I could just watch it, and then it'll just happen before my eyes. But of course, you know, then the other part of my brain's like, you got to honor the books, and you bought them anyway. So
I've got two words for you, Brockett.
Yeah.
Audiobook.
I know. I hear those are fantastic, and I am a big fan of audiobooks, so yeah, I will definitely have to try and check them out.
It is the one thing that I was able to accomplish during the 2 hours and 45 minutes that I was waiting for Prince yesterday was, as I was doing all that walking around in the grocery store, I was listening to Game of Thrones book 3, or Song of Ice and Fire book 3. So I'm actually, I think I'm probably about chapter 26 or 27 now, and I only started it last week. So, I mean, it's easier to swallow, I think. I mean, obviously there's going to be the inevitable middle bridge of the book, which is probably going to slow down a bit, which I found that with the second book, was that it was slow in the middle and really good at the beginning and the end.
Right, right.
Yeah. Peyton, any final thoughts on season 2, episode 2?
Littlefinger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought his little bit was funny. Because he really gets his pimp on, you know. he's standing there peeking through the peak holes and all that, and he hears some crying, and he's got to deal with that. So, the cleaning up the one lady to send her in to service the other fellow was pretty rough. And then he goes in and he's taking care of his workplace morale. So at first he's being all nice and gentle and kind with this woman who's out. You know, having these, you know, post-traumatic stress disorder from when watching his baby get killed to, saying essentially, if you don't, you know, take the night off, but if you don't, you know, if I lose money on this investment, I'm not going to be happy. And he illustrates that by saying how he let a man take the last woman who was unhappy and do with her the things that would never occur to other men. And you know what occurs to other men, right? It was like, okay, so yeah, you really need to get your ass in line here. So, yeah, it was, I thought it was quite telling on him. So
yeah, telling on him, and it does give some weight to what HBO did in the first episode, which is, of course, the graphic murders of all the infants and stuff like that. And it showed that not everybody in the world of Game of Thrones is immune to that.
Mm. No.
Because she's, I mean, she's still upset by it. You know, Cersei is upset by it.
Yeah.
Tyrion is distraught over it. So, I mean, they gave it some weight this episode where they didn't really take the time to do that in the first episode.
Yeah, and it also helps, him working like that helps to show that, you know, yes, he does have a position of power, and yes, he does they do deal with high-end clients and that sort of thing, you know, and I'm sure he probably does have some blackmail or whatever he can use, right? But, mm-hmm. you know, if he doesn't provide that service, head's going to be on the block, and that's not going to happen, right?
So, yeah, well, that's his way in. Like, that's how he hears all this stuff, right? I mean, somebody thinks that they're lying in bed just telling whatever to the local whore, but, you know, Littlefinger is, or someone serving him is, you know, listening at the people, hearing all the inner's going on, I guess, from the people that come into the brothel. So what else are you guys watching this week? Anything fancy?
Not for me. How about you, bro?
Well, I'd touch on these two things. They're sort of possibly outside your listeners' wheelhouses, but normally they're outside of my wheelhouse. I don't do a lot of BBC. I know that they're kind of coming on pretty strong, especially with BBC America. And, of course, Doctor Who kind of been a great transplant to the States now. But on Netflix, I happen to catch all of Downton Abbey Season 1. It's sort of the big Mad Men, but if it was in 1920s and that sort of thing. And it was good. I actually enjoyed it, even though I'm not a big dry British sort of point of view to things. Heavily recommend a TV show also from BBC called Luther. It's more of like a mini series, sort of like the BBC show Sherlock. There's only like, and I think BBC does this really well, and this is kind of why I also like Game of Thrones and certain cable TV shows, is what they do is they kind of have gotten to a point in television now where they can be like, look, did you see what happened to Lost? Do you know how much that show would have been way better if they only had like 3 seasons and each season was only 10 episodes? Do you know how much better that would be? Well, look what we can do. If you, I know you're not going to make a lot of money. It's only 10 episodes a season, but everybody will love it. And each one will have a lot of quality to it. And I think BBC has done that quite a bit. And there's the TV show Luther, which has Idris Elba, I believe his name is pronounced. I think the biggest thing you might recognize him from is he was Heimdall in Thor, sort of the man who controlled the Rainbow Bridge. He is so awesome. It's a basically closest thing it is he's sort of a dirty cop, but he deals specifically with a lot of serial killers, and it has a lot of elements of noir to it, which I'm a huge noir fan. Love private detectives. Not a big cop drama fan, so the fact that this is sort of a cop drama, but I love it so much, is really surprising me. Really well acted, well done. But more in the wheelhouse of fantasy and sci-fi. Legend of Korra came out, which is the Avatar: The Last Airbender new TV series.
Oh, cool! I haven't seen that yet. Is it good?
The Legend of Korra, the original.
Oh, I've seen the original. I'm looking forward to Legend of Korra. Did you see the first episode?
Oh yeah. Oh, it's fantastic, and I'm a big fan of what both you guys do in general, with the cartooning. I love just cartooning stuff. It's part of the reason why I like Pixar, is because they use the cartooning to tell a great story, and they don't worry if somebody's head doesn't look like a real person's head. So Legend of Korra has that really perfectly polished amount of cartooning to it. And if anything, it looks even more clean and beautiful. And right off the bat, has some really great action in it and is very fascinating. I won't even really tell you what the setup is for this one, so just go out, you'll be really surprised what they do. And
cool.
Just Wolverine and the X-Men was another little cartoon. Big X-Men fan, watched the whole series on Netflix as well, and have had X-Men on the mind, so cool.
The anime one, the Wolverine and the X-Men?
No, I actually have a few friends who have seen that, and they say the art is interesting, but it is not, unfortunately, very good.
Yeah, so. I watched a series of X-Men on Netflix that was all anime stuff, and it was really not that well done either. But surprisingly, at least the writing was okay, in that I watched the whole series, like all 20 half-hour episodes or whatever the hell there were, because the plot ran the whole season. So it was always the what's going to happen next. Unfortunately, I was just wading through a lot of like anime wobble eyes and stuff to try to get to the end of the episode to find out what happens. It's like, oh no! Oh!
Nosebleed.
Yeah. Blush.
Oh, that kind of stuff I can't deal with. But funny you should mention X-Men, because that was the one thing that I watched this week that I can at least report back on, was X-Men First Class on Netflix. I had seen it before, and I liked it. I thought it was good. And I liked it the second time around, and it was really fun to watch it with Jocelyn. She'd seen it as well. So we had the opportunity to talk, you know, during the movie because we had both seen it. So we weren't really worried about, you know, like talking over key points of dialogue or whatever. But the only thing that still stands out to me as a real failure in that movie is the lightning fast switch for Magneto at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
He walks into the submarine. He defeats, I can't remember the dude's name, Kevin Bacon. I can't remember.
Oh, Sebastian Shaw.
Shaw, thank you. Defeats Shaw, and then he walks out talking all brothers and sisters, and we are the brethren, we are the future. It's like, he didn't talk like that the entire movie. He talked like a regular Joe. He had some issues, but he just talked normally. Right. He didn't sound like an evangelist, and it was too fast, and it just, and that's when it went cheesy on me, and it felt like, it's one of those things that Chad always says, the director's cut is always better. And I bet you it probably is, because there's probably about 15 minutes of footage somewhere, you know, either scattered throughout the last act of the movie or all in and around that area where the transition from Eric to Magneto is a lot smoother.
Mm.
And that's the only issue I have that with that movie. Everything else I thought was great.
Yeah.
So have you guys seen it? You've seen it, I think, Brock. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I thought the origin of the helmet and all that stuff was kind of a neat idea. And,
Right.
It was handled pretty good. You know, Beast looked pretty good.
Yeah,
they did an okay job with him.
Yeah, I thought it was fairly good. Mostly the big highlights of that film were German Kevin Bacon. Nazi German Kevin Bacon at the beginning, which was fascinating. I could have watched 50 minutes of just that element of his character. And really, oddly enough, the character I didn't get very excited when I heard about it to see his origins was actually young Eric Lyncher, sort of James Bonding around the world. That part was really cool. Also, James McAvoy, of course. But yeah, I agree whole hog with you, Joel. The ending was... felt very much like a studio man stepping in a room and being like, well, we can't necessarily drag this out too much. Let's get things moving along so we can get a good sequel going and work. So
yeah.
The one thing I thought was funny, it had a PG rating, didn't it?
I don't remember.
Something PG or PG-13. I mean, I think what a rating has is, I think the rating board in the States only allows like one F-bomb. And they saved that for Wolverine, which I thought was kind of funny.
Oh, that was so brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah. That was really well done.
That was a great moment.
Very cool. Well, I see that, Brockett, you've also got some things listed in our reading section, which is usually pretty dry for us. So what has the writer been reading?
Well, I finished all the Hunger Games recently, did those for Biggest Fan, but also for my own amusement. Went through those really quick in the amount of time it takes me to read one Game of Thrones book, or sorry, one Song of Ice and Fire book, three books down, and I'm a slow reader. So I got through those for the Hunger Games, excellent series, enjoyed that. And then also just when it comes to sort of other things, I started Jonathan Hickman's run on the Fantastic Four. I know if anybody's aware of comic books right now, there's quite a few big names that are kind of rising to the forefront. I know Scott Snyder is one that's really stood out. And now I'm going to blank on all the rest of them. But Rick Remender and also Jonathan Hickman. And I gave it a try because I'm not a big Fantastic Four fan, but I heard it was very excellent. And I started it and I have enjoyed it, but it has the same problem I've always had with Fantastic Four. I like sci-fi, but I'm not in love with the science part of the fiction.
Yeah.
And it's really excellent character study, and I love that. But when they get into Reed Richards' like crazy science mind, it's fascinating. But at the same time, like I'm like, okay, also I like punches and things blowing up, and I'm kind of like that. So it is a great, definitely a great take on the characters, what I've seen so far of it. But yeah, I thoroughly recommend that for Fantastic Four fans.
Did you ever read the Ultimate Fantastic Fours when they had that out a couple years ago?
Right. I did actually start with a lot of the Ultimate line, and I did actually enjoy the first two arcs, I believe, of that. I actually really enjoyed those, yeah.
Did you see the zombie arc?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The introduction of the Marvel Zombies, which now has consumed an entire wing of probably Marvel development, where they just are like, God, why?
But, yeah, they just keep going that road. But but again, with the Reed Richards and the science thing and all that, and they're locked in a cell, and they're trying to keep them under quarantine. He's saying how he's going to break out. He's made something using like a pencil or a pen and a bunch of other stuff. They just deploy to get somebody to open the door, and then he just kills them, which I thought was pretty funny.
Have you guys seen any of the is it X-Men versus Avengers right now?
Yeah, the big Marvel event.
Big crossover. That's the big event that I see online quite a bit. And I don't know. I mean, if you're looking for punches, Brockett, that might be where to find them.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely. Although I actually shy away from big events until maybe a couple of years removed, and then I always catch up with things in trades. I'm terrible at doing the weekly pulls as it is, but yeah, and usually by then all the big secrets of the event have been revealed, and then I'm like, oh well, I guess I don't need to read 12 issues to find out what happened to Captain America. So
yeah. Speaking of the Avengers, I mean, I know that I'm gonna speed ahead quickly to make sure that this hasn't made it into our internet picks, and it hasn't. That's good. There's a new trailer out for the Avengers.
Yeah,
and it is pretty cool. I'm getting a little bit more excited for this movie. At first, I was like, "What?" You know, like I had the same thing, grievances that Peyton has brought up, where it's like, "Okay, everybody looks pretty cool except for Captain, and I'm not so sure I'm going to dig Scarlett Johansson, you know, her character." But they're doing a little bit better job advertising with the trailers. They're looking pretty cool. It's the one that I'm thinking of is I don't remember the name of it. I'm sure you can look it up online easy enough, but it's the one where it's just Tony Stark talking, and he's, you know, arguing with Loki, and he's basically like, "You've got this. Well, we've got a Hulk." And then they show all these really cool scenes of the Hulk doing stuff. I'm like, "Ooh, I think I'm going to like this movie a lot."
There's a couple of the trailers that came out this week. There's one where at the end of the trailer, Cap looked at Hulk and says, "Smash!" Like, you know, go fetch.
Nice.
And there's another clip floating around of the Black Widow, and she's tied up in a chair being interrogated, and she's talking on a cell phone to Coulson, and Coulson's like, "You got to come in. We need you now." And she's like, "This guy's been giving me everything." And then she basically dismantles three guys while she's still tied in the chair. Anyway,
I saw that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that sounds great, but I mean, I hope they're not giving us everything in the trailers.
I don't think so.
You know, I mean, I know for that demographic, they've got to do the hard sell, and you really have to know what you're looking for. But still, like, I'd like to see.
There's some stills floating. You can see close-ups of the new version of the Hulk as well, and it looks a bit more like it's a Gruffalo.
Ruffalo.
Anyway, so which I thought was well done. Anyway, and I saw somewhere online they had pictures of all the last three versions of the Hulk, and you know, 9 years between Ang Lee's and now, and you know, it really has come a long way. Like, you know, the texturing and the it just looks a lot more, you know,
tangible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Yes. Soot on arms technology has grown exponentially, so now the Hulk looks great. He looks awesome. Yeah. Look at that rippling soot. Oh my God. Fantastic. Give that man a check. Yeah.
Right on. Well, this would be the section where we would talk about our latest email. We don't have any this week, but I will at least relay to you that you can email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can also send us a voicemail or a tweet. And it's The Citadel Cafe on Twitter as well. Voicemails, please send them in MP3 format. Keep it under 1 minute if at all possible. If you're a little bit over and you're making a good point, I won't cut you off. But beyond that, I will play the Headless Horseman on your clips for the TCC email section. Well, I'm having a hard time concentrating tonight, guys. I'm sorry. I'm all over the place.
Also,
if you happen to mention something about Game of Thrones on Twitter, please use the Winter is Coming TCC hashtag, which makes it easy for us to find if we don't happen to be following you already. Well, the last section of the show is always a lot of fun. This is our Internet Minute, where we throw in a bunch of really cool things that we've seen online. I've got a couple of really quick ones, so I'm going to go first. The first one is something I saw on Google Plus called Text from Dog. Felicia Day shared this.
Very funny.
It's a Tumblr blog, and it's basically this guy that's texting back and forth with his dog. It's a bunch of iPhone screen captures. So it's just a short little humor blog with some stuff that's for you to read. And it is bloody hilarious. I think the best one that I read was probably it was a couple days ago, and I think it's the one where he calls himself Bat Dog. He's like, the postman is coming up the path. He thinks he's going to deliver some letters. He forgot one thing. Bat Dog.
Yeah, that you better not be up on the garage roof again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That kind of a back and forth of just like really kind of off the wall, hilarious humor. There's lots of callbacks. So if you've been reading for a few days, it gets funnier as you go. And I thought that was really well put together. And the other one is actually also pretty geeky. I don't think it was Felicia Day. I think it might have been Veronica Belmont that shared this on Google Plus. So a long time ago, but I've been meaning to share it on the show. I'm not a big gamer, but I really enjoyed the humor in the Borderlands 2 launch trailer. I mean, the game doesn't come out until September 18th, but it's basically like, you know, 87 bazillion guns, and there's a, there's a character class called the Gunzerker, which is basically you can hold two of any gun in the game, and the chances of holding two of the same are nearly impossible, because apparently in the first game there was actually 1.something million combinations of guns that you could possibly have.
Yeah.
Like they really just kind of went full tilt on this game and gave people like the lowbrow kind of what they want. But then also it's an RPG. So you've got like these talent tech trees that you can go through as a first person shooter, and you can be like a banshee character, and there's like a ninja character, and there's all these different skill sets that you can get, and it just looks like an absolute crap ton of fun. And then, of course, they have a robot dubstepping in the trailer, which I lost my mind. Like,
really, claptrap.
Yeah, you can really tell that they have a good sense of humor at the game company. They're not trying to take themselves too seriously. So, if things look a little bit wonky in the game, or if the story is just a little bit off kilter, people that are like, you know, diehard, like Medal of Honor fans and Call of Duty fans are not going to be like, bah, that would never happen, because like there's the sci-fi and the character design and the alien and robot design in this thing is just out of this world. It looks like an absolute ton of fun. So I even want to play the first one, having seen the trailer for the second.
Oh, you should.
Yeah. So we'll have both of those links in the show notes. So Brockett, it sounds like you've played the first one. Good, I take it.
Oh, yeah, I'm not a first-person shooter fan, but the gun system is very Diablo-esque, if people are aware of the Diablo system of, like, you get, like, 1,000 versions of one sword, and it looks the same, but somehow, since it's green, it has this kind of power, and not blue, so it doesn't have this kind of power. So the gun system was cool, and yeah, it's kind of, I think, on the back cover, says it's an RPS, like a role-playing shooter, and I love that element, and the cartoonism, or cartoon elements were excellent. I love that game quite a bit, and I'm excited for this one. I gotta watch this trailer after the show.
Cool.
Yeah, the trailer's pretty cool. The I don't know if it's cel shading or if they just painted the characters to make it look like cel shading, but it is done very well. And but the one thing about the trailer that really strikes me is the music. It sounds like I'm like 18, 19 years old, and at the end of the night, and I'm hammered at a rave, and I just want to go home, and I'm waiting for my buddies. I'm like, come on, get a cab. I'm like, just turn this music off. I want to go home. And it just fills your head anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they obviously did that on purpose
for the trailer. It's just funny. I listen to it. I just keep going over my mind. I was like, oh, my God, when's the cab going to get here?
Cool. Peyton, what about you, sir? What are your picks for this week?
I just got the one that you sent over there yesterday, Kane's Arcade. It's a 9-year-old boy who makes a cardboard arcade in his father's shop. His father wanted to keep him busy for the summer, and you know, had a trouble 9 years old or whatnot, and they're living in L.A. And so the kid made one video game, one arcade game out of cardboard, and two, and three. And in the summer, he had his shop filled, but he had no customers. And one guy came in and played the games, and then wanted to make a film about it, and so they posted the film 2 days ago, and now it has over 1 million hits. And yesterday, I think it was, because it was starting to get so much playing stuff, they wanted to get a scholarship fund together for the kid. So as of yesterday, there were $50,000 in it. 2 hours ago when I uploaded my stuff, it had 80,000, and now it's over 100. So
wow. That's great.
Yeah, it's great. And if you watch the video, man, like I was just smiling ear to ear, like this kid is awesome.
He is really cool. Like really cool. Every part of these video games work to the point where if you win, he crawls into the cardboard box and starts feeding tickets out himself as if you won five tickets, and it just comes out of the hole that he cut in the cardboard. He made he made a claw game. It's about a 10-minute short film, and it's totally worth watching.
Yeah. They do this big flash mob for him and stuff, and it's great.
Yeah, really well done.
Pulling up in the car, you're almost getting teary eyed. Like, this is awesome.
Nice. Brockett, what about you, sir?
Just some trailers for different things. There's I might be late to the party on this one. I probably am, but there's a Mass Effect debut trailer for its cartoon, as if Mass Effect was getting its own 80s cartoon. I think this guy also did a Watchmen one, which was hilarious, and this one's also good, including members of the gay Mass Effect playing musical instruments, which is hilarious. Really, really funny, especially if you know the Mass Effect series. And also, a trailer I just happened upon before we started the show was for Simon Pegg's new film, A Fantastic Fear of Everything.
Yeah.
It looks really cool, and it looks kind of like a comedy horror, like Shaun of the Dead and Zombieland, which I'm a big fan of good comedy horror, which can be very hard to do. But I'm very excited about this because, of course, Simon Pegg really hasn't done me wrong of what I've seen of his. So also going to check that film out when it comes out.
Fantastic. No, that sounds really cool. I watched Dawn of the Dead over Christmas holiday with Jocelyn. I mean, it was okay. I'm not a big zombie movie fan. I mean, I think I would probably enjoy, what's the other movie that he did about the cops?
Oh, did I say Dawn of the Dead or Shaun of the Dead?
Did I mishear you?
Oh, I think, I'm sorry. If I said Dawn of the Dead, I meant Shaun of the Dead. But that is if you saw the Simon Pegg zombie film, you saw the right one.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I know it was funny and stuff, but after a while, it started to grate on me. What's the other one that he did? Hot Fuzz? Hot Fuzz. Mm-hmm. I would probably like that because I like Simon Pegg. Like, I find him funny.
I think Hot Fuzz is on Netflix, and if it's not, I have it on disc or you can borrow it.
I'm pretty sure it was too. If it isn't now, it was when we were looking for different movies to watch.
But over the one, I think it has one of the funniest ends of a car chase. I think in Hot Fuzz, this really hurts. I want some ice cream. You know, it's worth checking out if you haven't seen it. You're oh God, that's disgusting.
Right.
This really hurts. Anyway.
Great bushy beard is another good quote. For those who've seen it, it's awesome.
Oh, right on. Well, I'll have to put that on my watch list on Netflix. Well, that brings us to the close of the show. That is the end of this episode of The Citadel Cafe. If you want to check out the show notes and the things that we post on our blog, you can check that out at thecitadelcafe.com. The show notes are, of course, written by the lovely Jocelyn Moffitt from the Gamers In Podcast. If you're a gamer, check out Jocelyn and her co-host Ryan over at gamersinpodcast.com. And as I mentioned before, you can send us a message on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+, just The Citadel Cafe across all social networks. The email is thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can also leave us an iTunes review, which is one of the best ways for our podcast to reach new listeners. If you like the show, give us a rating, leaving us a review, and we will share your thoughts on the next episode right here. But we don't have any again this week, so I will quickly glaze over the section and move to the very last part, which is where I thank our friend Brockett for filling in for Chad and give him a chance to talk about some of the cool things that he does online.
Nice. I will be going to the iTunes store as soon as it's over and write you guys a review. So there you go. Those are awesome to get those iTunes review. You can find me on my own podcast, Biggest Fan Podcast with Kyle Ferguson from StarCast, if you're aware of that StarCraft podcast, and also on Fuzzy Feeling Films, which I talk about romantic and comedic films. If you're interested in Game of Thrones, our next episode after the one I'll be posting, which is on Hunger Games, will be Game of Thrones. It'll be the book series, Song of Ice and Fire, and it'll also be the TV show. Kyle and I will talk about that. We'll kind of give some general stuff so people who may not know as much about it will also get that, but we tend to ramble and we tend to focus on things you shouldn't focus on, so it's always a lot of fun when we discuss any fad that's driving you mad out there, from yoga to Justin Bieber to Dungeons and Dragons. Anything really that can be pop culture is in our wheelhouse.
Fantastic. I'm a big fan of Biggest Fan. It's one of the nice podcasts that's on my constant rotation. Oh, well,
thank
man.
You very much.
Well, hey, no problem. Thank you for being on the show. I appreciate you filling in for Chad. So everybody, have been Joel Duggan from StarCrossedOnline.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Google Plus with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
People can find me at CardboardTreehouse.com, on Twitter at PeytonFrancis.com, and Facebook, and once in a while I'm on the Google Plus, and, you know, here or there, everywhere. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I guess one last birthday shout out to Mr. Chad Merlin, who turns something
40,
today.
40?
40? 40? No, not quite 40, but we're all getting up there. So I hope you are having a very happy birthday, sir. Hi to both you and the wife. Everybody else, you've been listening to The Sigil Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Cheap, cheap. Happy Easter.
Chad's very upset I'm still in his chair, and it's very moist.
Very, very moist.
Oh, boy.